Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have a very special guest, Leslie Manoukian. Leslie is president and founder of Health Freedom Defense Fund and a former successful Wall Street business executive. Her career in finance took her from New York to London with Goldman Sachs. She later became director at Alliance Capital in London, running their European growth portfolio management and research businesses. And today we'd like to do a focused discussion on the World Economic Forum and its Great Reset agenda, what the programs and goals of the agenda are about, why was it initiated around the time of the COVID virus crisis, what are the implications of the agenda to society, the economy, and to democracy and freedoms, and also if are there alternative approaches to the Great Reset to address the target goals and challenges that the Great Reset agenda is attempting to address. Welcome, Leslie.
Great to be here with you today.
Awesome. Yeah, I thought we'd begin and start off if you could discuss a bit on your career background and what your Health Freedom Defense Fund is all about.
Yeah. So I went to business school, to one of the, you know, elite business schools in America, and then got hired by Goldman Sachs. And went and worked for them in New York, then went to London, then, you know, I was in finance for a number of years. But what was interesting to me was that during all this time, I was getting sicker and sicker. And it all started the summer after business school. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. Kept going to the doctor, and he finally said, I know you're sick, you know you're sick, but Western medicine can't help you. Why don't you go and see a homeopath or an acupuncturist? And I was living in London at the time, and homeopathy is very big over there. And I ended up going to see a homeopath, and it was life-changing. And it was so life-changing that I actually enrolled in homeopathy college in secret and started hearing about vaccines. And so I had always gotten every vaccine. I got sick from vaccines, didn't know it. But before I went to go and work in New York, I got every jab that they would give me before I went on a trip to Southeast Asia, before I started my big job in New York City. And I've never been the same since, and that was 30 years ago. And what ended up happening was that starting to go and see a homeopath was so changing. I went to the homeopathy college, and the very first day there, they started talking about all the different things we were going to learn over the next 3 years, the mind-body connection, which is now so widely accepted in medicine, right? It used to be considered a crazy kind of notion. And now it's like, we are our body. Our body is a manifestation of our mental, emotional, and spiritual state. And anyway, one of the things that the guy who was leading the orientation program said was, we're going to talk about vaccine injury. And I raised my hand and I said, you know, what are you talking about? They're the greatest invention of mankind. And he said, well, that's one perspective, and we're going to learn about another. And he gave me a book to read after the class. And I read this book, and I was absolutely stunned by it, because I thought that they had no downside. I thought there was only good from them. And the reason this is important is that it took me down a rabbit hole I didn't expect to go down. I read this book. It had over 960 footnotes in the back of it, documenting a huge array of illness and injury and death after shots to our babies. And I just thought, this can't be real. I took the book. I went to the president of the college, and I'm like, how can this be true? I was so angry. And she sort of shrugged her shoulders like, you know, sorry to disappoint you, honey, and destroy your worldview, but money, power, lots of things. Anyway, it was the impetus behind me making a documentary film called The Greater Good. People can see it at greatergoodmovie.org. It's an award-winning documentary about vaccines, the whole vaccine debate. And making that movie catapulted me into the health freedom arena. And, you know, I had started researching that movie back in around 2000, 2001, and had just learned so much that shocked me, and started to put all the pieces together about my own health, and realized that that was what was going on with me. And so I've been detoxing and trying to heal from that. And then what happened was in early 2020, when the whole news out of China broke, I said to my husband, it's finally happening. They've been taking away our rights for years. They've been putting in all this legislation to facilitate a medical emergency that allows them to literally completely control society from the top down. And it's finally here. And I knew I had to do something. And so I started Health Freedom Defense Fund. And Health Freedom Defense Fund is an educational nonprofit, an advocacy group, not in that we advocate for a political party or anything like that. We can't do that, but we certainly can advocate for policies that are supportive of our health and of our freedoms. That's our number one objective, is to truly codify in law and instill in the public consciousness the notion that we are all sovereign individuals with bodily autonomy that can't be violated. But the other thing we do is we litigate. So we have launched over a dozen lawsuits in the last year or year and a half across the United States. We're only focused on the US. So that's kind of a quick and dirty. I left Wall Street because I was really disillusioned with it, frankly. I heard some things that just staggered me. I don't know if you ever heard my story about the CEO who told me that he knew that their new drug was going to injure and kill people. But the bad news was the FDA was going to make them put a black box warning on their packaging. But the good news was they'd still do $7 billion in peak sales. I just couldn't handle this anymore. I couldn't countenance this kind of ethical principle or lack thereof. And I had to get out. So that was why I quit.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Recently you've come out with some slides in other podcasts that would be great to review in terms of your perspective and views on the Great Reset, as mentioned at the outset, you know, why it happened, how it happened, in particular when, you know, was there anything unique about that time frame? I thought it'd be good to address that. You've got some really great slides, and our views are very similar too. I had similar awareness at the time, like with the repo crisis in the repurchase agreement market, the overnight lending market between banks, you know, lending for 1 day, two day or 3 days type of thing. And that crisis began in September of 2019 and intensified, really heightened in March of 2020. I remember with the Federal Reserve doing like 50 to 80 billion per day of liquidity into that market. And I said, this is unsustainable. And then boom, everything happened at that time, during that week, you know, the COVID-19 program initiative was launched. And but yeah, just would be great to see your slides.
Let's do that. Let me just say that I think that one event was truly the trigger for them, or the warning shot that the elites had to do something, and they had to do something very quick because the system was no longer sustainable. And they already knew it. They've known for a very long time that they can't kick this debt can down the road in perpetuity. And so they've known that they had to do something, but I think that really catalyzed them, right? They were like, whoa, we have got to do something, and we've got to do something very quick.
Yes.
And, you know, enter the Great Reset. So what I want to do too, to frame the slides, is to help people to understand that I think I kind of have a unique perspective because I'm a qualified homeopath. So I'm a healthcare practitioner, but I have an MBA and, you know, over a decade in finance, managing money and managing a hedge fund, managing a research department, being a research analyst, all these kinds of things. And then I've also got, expertise now in the whole vaccine and health freedom world from having done all this stuff. So most people are so focused on only the health aspects and why none of the policies make sense. And they don't make sense in a vacuum. But when you consider what the financial backdrop is for Western civilization, then it all kind of snaps into place in my view. So I just wanted to preface what we're going to talk about with that. So what we have is the situation where it is almost impossible for a scientist to do research that is not supportive of government's directives, government policy. It's almost impossible. And this is facilitated further by the fact that the foundations in the United States are so gargantuan. You know, the Gates Foundation with, what is it, over $50 billion in assets. I haven't looked at it recently. I don't know if it's 60 or 70. It's huge. We're talking billions and billions of dollars. And the same is the case for many others. And what they do is they grow their money tax-free ever since 1913 when the 16th Amendment was passed. And then the law was introduced which required, or which allowed the federal government to tax American citizens, but it exempted these foundations. And ever since then, these foundations have been using their reach and their power to implement policies truly that control society. I'm talking about academia, education, science, medicine. And so what they've done is they've really captured not just the hospitals, not just the research centers and the universities, but also our agencies, our health agencies. And so if you look at just what's going on, for instance, at University of Washington, which is the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation, or Imperial College, these were the two groups that put out the terrifying data that, you know, 2 million people in America were going to die in the next year or 2 years. And they put out very, very frightening numbers in Europe and the UK. They took, literally, Imperial College got $79 million in January of 2020 from the Gates Foundation, $133 million in the previous few years in total. And the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation was granted $279 million in 2018. You look at MIT, this is everywhere, okay? And then on top of that, you've got the pharmaceutical industry actually pays the journal editors. This idea that evidence-based medicine even exists is just silly. They're being paid. What for? They're just giving money to journal editors at some of the biggest journals. On top of that, the pharmaceutical industry is actually the primary source of income for many of these journals. So if you look just at The Lancet, which is one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, and the Journal of the American Medical Association, they derive a huge portion of their revenues from something called reprints, which is, if you are a pharmaceutical company and you get a study published in one of these journals, what you do is you go to this, to the journal, and you say, we want a reprint of our article published with a glossy cover that says The Lancet and everything. It's right, prestigious. And then they ship it to tens of thousands of doctors all over the world. And they're paying money for that. So they've become, and that's not even advertisements in the journals. This is just reprints. Mm-hmm. And literally half of JAMA's revenues come from reprints, and 40% of The Lancet, considered the most prestigious journal in the world, mm-hmm. if not the second most. The New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet are the top two.
Yeah.
This is insane. People have to understand that what has happened in the last 2 years would not be happening if it weren't for this unbelievable capture of the medical complex, essentially. And the most eminent scientists and the journal editors themselves say that 50 to 90% of the research is either fraudulent or untrue. Mm-hmm. So the pharmaceutical industry spends tons of money. I mean, this shouldn't be surprising to anybody. Lobbying Congress, the biggest lobbyist in Congress, they spend more money. They have given money to almost everybody in Congress. Very, very few people. I think it's 97 out of 100 senators and 90% of U.S. congresspersons. It's insane. But it doesn't just stop there, because of course, it's not just the medical complex that we're getting all this information from and that we're being essentially mind controlled by, in my view. That's what's happening. The public is being hypnotized by this stuff, but they're also, they control the media. And when I say control the media, I truly mean it. Look how much pharma and healthcare spent on digital, on ads, all ads in 2020. The estimate is $35 billion. That's the GDP of a lot of countries, most countries in the world, frankly. Yeah. Okay, we're talking something so vast. And there's new information that's come out recently that the federal government, I've heard that it's $1 billion. I've also read that it's over 300 million, that they paid somewhere between 300 and a billion to the media outlets in the United States in order to portray all of the federal government's claims about COVID and the jabs and the masks and the tests in a positive light, just in the last 2 years. We're talking extraordinary amounts of money. And, you know, this is just another piece of the puzzle. We have to understand that it's multifaceted, right? It couldn't have happened if all of these pieces weren't in place. And I can go into, I guess I'll go into this later. Actually, let me go forward.
Into, to just add to that, the whole regulatory capture environment, but it's sort of a revolving door as well. Those working in regulatory agencies prior, you know, worked for private industry companies, and then, and vice versa, they may be heading out back to those same, you know, private industry companies. So there's a lot of...
That's exactly what I wanted to mention, Richard, exactly that. So there have been a bunch of pieces of legislation that have facilitated this. You had the Bayh-Dole Act in 1980, and that allowed federal scientists to retain the intellectual property rights, the patent rights to their research that they, you know, any products that they develop, okay? And that was introduced in 1980. In 1992, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act was introduced, and that allows the pharmaceutical industry to pay money directly to the FDA in order to get their drugs fast-tracked. And so what's happened is that ever since Bayh-Dole, the royalties that the NIH has received as a result of patents that they own is $2 billion. That's just as an agency. In addition, individuals can earn $150,000 per year per patent on vaccines and drugs that they've developed during their employment at NIH, which is funded by us, okay? So you look at the COVID injections, we funded the research into them. The Moderna jab was developed by NIH, and NIH owns half of the Moderna jab patents, okay? We funded it, billions, I think the US government gave $10 billion to the pharmaceutical industry to develop these things. Then we're forced to take them. They're mandated by government. Of course, I've been fighting all this stuff in my lawsuits through Health Freedom Defense Fund. And then the government also gives them a liability shield so that the pharmaceutical industry is not liable for any of the harm or injury that they cause. This is the greatest racket ever thought up or implemented, truly. So if you look at just how badly captured FDA is, 65% of the drug approver salaries comes from the pharmaceutical industry itself. I mean, who are these people reporting to? They're essentially accountable to the pharmaceutical industry, not to the public. And this is the whole problem. And a perfect illustration of this is the fact that the FDA, not Pfizer, the FDA asked a federal judge and court to block release of Pfizer's internal documents from its clinical trials over the COVID shots. Now, we funded those things, so that data should be in the public domain, especially if these shots are being mandated and they've been issued emergency use authorization, but they haven't, they've been hidden. And FDA asked the judge to prevent the documents from being released. To me, that just speaks volumes about whose side they're on. So if you look at it, CDC is a public-private partnership. They've taken hundreds of millions of dollars from the pharmaceutical industry and from private foundations in the last couple of years. They take money every year from these groups. It is and as you said, it's a revolving door. If you look, NIH senior officials have left NIH and gone to be research directors of vaccines at Sanofi, one of the biggest pharmaceutical and vaccine makers in the world. The head of the CDC went to Merck Vaccines and headed up Merck Vaccines globally. That's Julie Gerberding. Scott Gottlieb left FDA and is now on Pfizer's board. It's just a revolving door. We have comprehensive industry capture, and it is really, truly, I think we really, truly need to remember caveat emptor for everything, right? It doesn't matter if it's free. You're putting it into your body. You're buying it on some level. You have to be aware that these industries, these agencies are not looking out for your best interests. So let's just go back. And let's go back to where we were. So this whole project that we're dealing with, actually, I'm going to go here, wouldn't have happened if it weren't for the long-term plan. And in Europe, they've been putting a long-term plan in place for a long time, which is the federalization of Europe. They've been saying, oh, no, the EU is just an economic bloc to give us economic strength to compete with the US. Hogwash. It's about federalizing Europe through the back door. And all you have to bear in mind is that the EU president and commissioner, EU president of the European Council and the EU commissioner are both unelected and unaccountable. You cannot get rid of them. They are appointed. They have zero accountability to the public. And the members of European Parliament really, truly have no power. They can vote for stuff, but it's not binding on the president and the commissioner. That's insane if you're a democratic society. But that's what's been expected. And then they work.
Only goes up to the MEP layer, right? Which means still no effect, no power, right? You don't have the democracy at the EU president and commissioner level.
No, they are appointed. The voters cannot vote them out of office. They're not accountable to us. And, you know, these groups are obviously, collaborating extensively with the UN, the World Health Organization, IMF. It's all of these globalist groups collaborating. And why? Well, I believe it's because they want to implement the Great Reset. So, and what really is the Great Reset, right? Let's put it into context. Let's help people really, truly understand. It is installation of a one world government through the apparatus of a digital control grid, or through the support of a digital control grid. And it's very interesting that the Ukraine has already introduced the World Economic Forum's model. They've already introduced a universal basic income. They just announced this. They've introduced a digital identification and the passport, which is your medical records, vaccine, all of your identification, your ability to work, financials, all that kind of stuff. It's all tied together. It's already been announced in Ukraine. So there's been a very long plan in the United States as well. As I mentioned, we already have the 16th Amendment with it, which allowed us to be taxed, but the super rich were exempted. And then you also had the implementation of the Federal Reserve. This all happened, it was all voted through in 1913. All took place in 1913. And it's so bad that there was actually really big investigations into the activities of these foundations. These foundations have literally been seeking for decades, in fact, nearly a century, to subvert the fabric of American society. And they have actually admitted in private that their true objective is to install collectivism in America. That's their objective, according to Norman Dodd, who headed up the Rees Committee's investigations of private foundations. So basically what you have is that these foundations are going and they are doing an agenda, even though they're claiming that it's philanthropy, right? It's under the cover of philanthropy. But what they're doing is they're investing in every aspect of our society, including entertainment. I didn't put that on here, but they do the same thing in entertainment. And they're basically undermining the moral fabric and the individual, the principles that upon which Western civilization and the United States in particular were founded, which is about individualism, individual responsibility, individual rights, that our rights come from our creator, not from government. And what ended up happening was that this was incredibly, stunning to most people. So they stopped them. They literally halted them. And then in 1975, you had the Church Committee investigations. And this is a really critical piece of it as well, because the Church Committee investigated the actions and activities of the CIA and other intelligence and law enforcement operations. And what they found was that these groups were being weaponized against the US public in a variety of ways. Operation Mockingbird was a CIA program where they were installing 400 CIA assets in media outlets across the country. So basically they had CIA agents everywhere, and they were obviously using that in order to control or at least influence the flow of information to the public. And then they also exposed, and this was exposed during the committee hearings, that they were drugging and torturing citizens. They were infiltrating these civil rights groups and essentially doing everything they could to quash any kind of populist movements. Now, let me ask you something, Richard. When you think of the term populism, what comes to mind? Negative or positive things?
I would say positive in the sense of, what the people want, but, maybe governments might say, oh, that's negative because we don't want, to lose control.
100%. I totally agree with you on the positive. Populism is what we should have. We should have the people determining where we go. We should have the people determining what policies are put in place. But do we get to vote on GMOs being forced on us? No. Do we get to vote on having our water fluoridated? No. Do we get to vote on all of the Roundup that's being spread all over the world? No. Do we get to vote on the mercury and aluminum that are in children's jabs and in adult jabs? No. We don't get to vote on any of this stuff. We are literally being poisoned by our own governments, and we don't get a say. And when it comes to populism, what they've done in the last 4 or 5 years is very successfully connect populism to radicals. Okay. It really should be a positive thing. And a populist president is a positive thing, but they have been able to somehow smear populism as a bad thing. And you have people like John Kerry, who was Secretary of State, going out there talking about how we've got to stop populism. We need to get rid of it. The thing I just read about the EU Superfund, it referenced the dangers of populism. It's truly staggering. And the unwitting and I think fearful average citizen doesn't think about it critically to understand that this is actually undermining their own power in order to retain it at the top, right? This is like a psychological operation to try and explain to you that populism is bad when it's a good thing. And these are some of the programs that they employ in order to do so.
Yeah, exactly. And as mentioned before, we've written this paper on an alternative Great Reset. We emphasize a better approach as being direct democracy, which is employed to some extent like in Switzerland, where you have the individual citizens voting rather than a representative of government, where you can get into these problems, right, of special interest group, lobbyists, influenced by corporations or nonprofit organizations, not to mention, not having a sort of governance best practices for nonprofit organizations, which seems to be a big issue here as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting that they are using all of these crises as a way to say that we need more standardization, we need more licensure, we need all of this. In fact, one of the things that the Superfund said was that it was the executive order from Biden a couple of weeks ago on cryptocurrencies and digital assets. They specifically said that we need to make sure it's safe for you. Okay, we need to make sure that the digital markets and cryptos are safe for the public, and that it's all controlled. Let me tell you something. Hospitals in the United States injure 40,000 people a day through medical errors. They kill between 250 and 400,000, 440,000 every year from medical errors. Those people are all licensed. There's all sorts of standardization. It's not helping us. The whole point, in my view, of standardization and licensure is control. And that's what they're trying to do. Every time you see this, you see that argument, you have to think that they're using government against the people in order to protect the guys, the big guys at the top. And this started decades ago, but in the medical complex, it started in the United States in 1910 when they introduced the Flexner Report that was commissioned by Carnegie and Rockefeller. And what that report said was that we need to standardize and license medicine because, we just think it'll be much, much safer for people if we do. And so they used that Flexner Report in order to smear, demean, and demonize ancient healing modalities like acupuncture that's been around for 5,000 years, Chinese medicine for 5,000 years, herbalists, naturopaths, chiropractors, midwives, homeopaths, all of these. That was really about. And that then facilitated so much of what I've already explained. And it's the same thing on the financial side. So I wanted to just say that this stuff really got worse in the early part of after 9/11. So after 9/11, we had the introduction of the Patriot Act, which allowed warrantless surveillance of American citizens. And then 2 weeks after that legislation was passed, there was something called Model State Emergency Health Powers Act legislation introduced. And that allowed, that accorded extraordinary powers to state health departments and governors in the event of a health emergency. Isn't that convenient? It was introduced literally, I think the Patriot Act was introduced and passed 45 days after 9/11. And then this Model State Emergency Health Powers Act was introduced about 2 weeks after that. I mean, it's very peculiar to me. And then what happened, you had the PREP Act in 2005, which is legislation that allows what's happened in the last 2 years to happen, which is that they can declare a state of emergency. They can then instruct corporations to create what are called medical countermeasures. And then under the PREP Act, they give them a liability shield, no legal or financial liability for those products that they then force on the public. That all happened in the first 5 years of the century. And it's really gotten worse in the last decade because of these things. They suspended the writ of habeas corpus, meaning that you don't have the right to appear before a judge and appeal against wrongful imprisonment if you are arrested, which is a hallmark of Western civilization, right? Mm-hmm. And then they actually, this is a staggering thing in the United States, but they legalized and funded propagandizing of American citizens. So all this legislation, if it didn't exist, we couldn't be, they couldn't have done what they've done in the last 2.5 years. All of it. Now I want to go back to how are they doing it? You know, what are the kind of tools they're employing, unless you want to talk about something else?
No, this would be great. Yeah, the steps on how this is being carried out.
Okay. So basically, in order for them to install their digital control grid, they need to do a few things. First of all, they need to get you to defer to authority. And I believe that that's why there's been so many confusing messages. Masks work, no masks don't work, no wear two masks, right? It's just back and forth between CDC, World Health Organization. There's been all of these conflicting messages and conflicting messages between CDC and World Health Organization and other health authorities. And so they need to get you to defer to authority. And one of the ways that they do that is through frightening you, but they also need to get you to give up normal society. And so they put out messages. You may remember in early January of 2020, they started talking about how the virus carried, cash carried the virus, meaning it's dangerous, right? And then shortly thereafter, there started to be coin shortages all across this country. I'm not sure about elsewhere. In preceding years, Australia's put out a message that cash is for criminals. They've been reducing the level of, you know, the cap or capping cash-based transactions in countries all over the world. And they've been outright canceling high denominations or outright canceling cash in general in certain countries. Canada has taken away a lot of the high denominations. Mm-hmm. Same thing in Europe and in India. They've capped, like in Europe, how much gold you can buy. I can't remember if it's $20,000 worth or $10,000 worth, but listen, they are basically tightening the controls on us in all ways. And in order to get rid of cash, which allows us to do things without somebody knowing about it, right? What if I don't want my doctor, what if I don't want the government to know that I'm seeing an acupuncturist? I could pay in cash, right? Is that a crime? Mm. Of course it's not, but they want it to be. And they have to condition you to accept that you going and paying the, you know, boy down the street to mow your lawn or buying your groceries or whatever you buy, the herbs you buy, whatever you buy in cash, that is a criminal behavior so that you will give it up. And they have to do that before they implement their solution, which is digital money. Digital money, a central bank digital currency. They have been issuing white papers for years about central bank digital currencies. And they want to introduce these so that then they can connect your digital currency, theirs, that's issued by the central bank, to your digital ID, your passport, and ultimately your universal basic income. So, I mean, listen, your viewers are probably all financially savvy people. Does it make any sense that small and medium-sized businesses were shut down during the crisis while big box stores were allowed to stay open because those were somehow safe?
No, just crazy. Yeah.
It defies logic, right, Richard? It defies logic. Unless you actually want to get rid of the small and medium-sized businesses, then it makes perfect sense. And why would you want to do that? And why would you introduce these COVID payments, which are around $1,000 to $2,000 a month? Well, you would introduce those because you want to destigmatize people taking money from the federal government. And also, once you've destroyed all the small and medium-sized businesses, then these people are going to need some kind of income. And so you've destigmatized getting rid of taking money from the government, and you've also destroyed their way of being independent, and you then have the ability to control them through the digital currency. And they've done this even more so by changing the structure of our banking system. So the Fed has announced that it wants to start taking deposits. I don't think they're actually taking any yet, but they're moving in that direction. And, you know, big tech has been wanting to issue digital currencies. So this is all about, you know, using what I think is best described as an oligarchy. That's what we live under in the West, is oligarchies. Really, I mean, one could also describe it as fascism, marriage between the corporate sector and the state. They're making all the decisions. They're pushing everything on us. And they're using technology and then their digital assets to control us. And ultimately, they'll give us universal basic income. But if you don't do what they tell you to do, you won't get universal basic income. And there's one more aspect of this, which is something called programmable money. You heard about this?
No.
So programmable money, they've been doing some research on this in the UK, but what they do is it's unbelievable. They have figured out how they can take a digital currency and essentially tag it with a software program or software instructions that tell it that this currency that we're issuing to you can only be used to buy bread. Mm-hmm. And it can be turned off. It can only be used to buy groceries, but, or gasoline. But if you're not in compliance with the SEG, the Sustainability, Environment, and Governance programs, you know, that they've initiated, if you've used too much power, mm-hmm. if you haven't recycled enough or done something, they'll turn your money off. That the programmability facilitates control. Okay. Now yeah. They couldn't be doing any of this.
I was just going to add the linkage between the central bank digital currency system and like a social credit scoring system is what you're getting at. And that's quite, can be quite powerful. And to the point where it could be used as tools of financial repression, right, in terms of, you know, making sure there's no wealth that leaves the country, like you have wealth drain or brain drain even, so that if you go outside of the country, the currency is no longer valid or usable, or is prohibited from leaving the country, or even that has a time limit, right? Maybe it only has a time limit of 6 months to encourage more spending during that 6 month period. So that all kinds of techniques coupled with the social credit scoring system that could be really, you know, nefarious even. So just crazy.
Completely. That's exactly what it is. It's a digital control grid, right? And what is the control about? It's about every aspect of your life. If you're not a good girl and you don't get your shot, if you don't take the drug they want you to take, if you use too much gas, if you say things, if you're friends with people that they don't like, they already do this in China. You get a lower credit score if you are friends with someone who says something that the government doesn't like. This is all about control. And it also, another aspect of it is the ability to prevent you from saving. So it expires after 6 months. So you can't save up to invest in something so that you could actually then compete against the control system. Mm-hmm. Right? So there's all these different facets of it. So, but they can't do this unless they have 5G. Okay? They need 5G, which is what Musk, Elon Musk, and Bill Gates are pushing, and using a satellite system, two satellite systems, in order to blanket the world in real, live, 24/7 video coverage of the entire Earth. They want to have real live surveillance 24/7 of every square inch. And so Musk has put up, I think, about 1,700 satellites. Last time I checked, I haven't checked in a couple of months, it may be more than that. Gates was, I think, targeting 1,000 by the end of last year. And this will facilitate connecting to every appliance. You know, if you buy a new toaster, it's connected to the web. If you buy a new washing machine, it's connected to the web. So they can monitor how much energy you have. Well, I have two freasers. That won't be legal, guaranteed, you know? Yeah. And so that's what you call the Internet of Things, all of these devices. They want to basically be able to tap into all of them. And they're using Starlink, which is Musk's, and Earth Now. That's what they're going to use, is these systems. We don't need faster downloads. That's not the reason for this. It's so that they have comprehensive surveillance of the globe. So they are also talking about something called the Internet of Bodies. And this is real, and it's really, it's even more terrifying than all of this, if this stuff isn't terrifying enough, because this is about connecting you as an individual to the web, okay? And how are they going to do that? Well, there are different ways. There are already thousands of people in Scandinavia who are chipped voluntarily, and their money and other records are on there, but also their office records, so they just like swipe their hand in front of a little pad that reads it, and then they can go into a business. Or in China, you use your face to open the door of your apartment building. So there are chips, there's facial recognition. And then there's also, though, micro circuitry. And there are scientific groups that have released documentation that the COVID shots have different kinds of self-assembling nanotechnology and circuitry in them. And we know, you can look this up on PubMed, which is the national repository of all scientific research in the United States, that there are dozens and dozens of papers on nanotechnology and the ability for them to remotely control animals by stimulating the brain with these implants, and also monitor. So let's just say they try to paint it as a really positive. If you're a diabetic and you forget to take your insulin, will just remind you, or else you will have you can have a port installed or something, you know, a little, I forget what it's called, but like a little thing inside of you that actually administers it, releases it into your system. So, you know, look, there could be some good uses of it, but I don't think most people want to be surveilled 24/7. They don't want someone who can actually control their brain or monitor their emotions. And you couple this with one of the World Economic Forum's advisors and spokespeople, a guy named Yuval Noah Harari, who's been saying for more than 5 years that the idea that you're an individual with an individual soul is wrong, and that the idea that you are in charge of yourself, that individuality or, you know, human, he says that literally you don't have a soul, you don't have anything in you. The idea that you're independent or an individual, he says, it's over. That's what he says. It's over. We can hack you.
Yeah.
That's what he says. Mm-hmm. That's where this is all going. And so this couldn't be happening, what we're going through, if it weren't for this technology. Mm-hmm. Okay, I moved you and now I can't go forward. What's happened here? Okay, so the vaccine passports, these programs that they're using all over the world, ID 2020 has been piloted for years in Bangladesh, where they're giving it to people. And then you've got trust stamp, all these things. They are a marriage of financial, medical, and digital identification and records. And it's all being implemented now, all in concert with these health agencies. So I want to just go forward a little bit. I mean, that's kind of the gist of what I want to share with you, but there are a couple other things that I think are important. One is that the Gates Foundation gave $1 billion to the media in the first 10 years of this century. And the last I saw that they'd given a few hundred million in the last couple of years. This idea that our media is independent is ridiculous. And the fact that I talked about the National Defense Authorization Acts in the last 5 to 10 years, those have facilitated or legalized propagandizing of American citizens. So these are huge problems that we're dealing with. And what's really happening is that, you know, there's been a global coup, and or it's still being, you know, it's still underway, and it's all under the guise of our healthcare. And what they're trying to do is use all these different organizations, all the technology, all of the NGOs together in order to frighten us into compliance so that they can install themselves as our unelected, unaccountable leaders. That's really it in a nutshell. And they're doing it now because they're broke and they can't kick the debt can down the street anymore. So I have a lot of information. This is something that really surprises most people, Richard. People believe that our healthcare systems are about healing us and about helping us. They're about medicine. And I think it's really important that people don't understand that. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. If you want to mention a few.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. I just didn't know how much time you had and if you wanted to go down this rabbit hole, because I think it's a really important piece. So, you know, President Eisenhower talked about the military industrial complex. And I think that he didn't understand that that really extended to the medical complex, and that that in many ways, the medical complex had become even more important, and that it would become even more important over the next 70 years. And so we're dealing with that right now. And in the United States, we pay basically twice as much per capita as most other Western countries for our quote unquote medical care. They call it healthcare. I don't think it's about health at all. And we have way worse outcomes than anybody else. We have a lower longevity. We have more than 50% of American school children have a chronic illness or neurological disability. More than half of all adults over the age of 50 are on several medications. You know, if you tell them you're not taking any drugs, they don't understand it. And it's because we're literally one nation under drugs. And what people don't understand is that is not medicine. Like, food is your medicine. Nutrition is your medicine. Love and peace and happiness and being outside are your medicine. Drugs, health doesn't ever come in a bottle. And it's actually harmful to many people. There was a study done in North Carolina, which evaluated hospitals, and they found that, you know, almost 20% of all hospital patients were harmed by their medical care. And in 2.5% of the cases, the patient died. A huge percentage, are permanent life-threatening injuries or permanent disabilities. It's insane. And if you look at what's going on, there are, I think I already mentioned this, but 40,000 medical errors in the United States every single day. I don't know what the data is on a global basis because it's not compiled that way. I'd have to go to every individual country, but this is a good snapshot of what is going on. And there are, you know, drugs kill so many people. Drugs kill, just think it is the opioids kill somewhere between 75 and 95,000 every year. And then on top of that, you've got all these other FDA approved, properly used drugs that are killing people. And if you look at the total number of deaths from medicine in America, there's a Johns Hopkins study that says it's about 250,000. There's another study that says it's 440,000 preventable deaths from medical errors. They're literally being killed by our medical system. And this isn't an emergency, but COVID is. Does that make any sense to you?
Absolutely.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
Right, yeah.
It's staggering. And so I really want to impress upon your viewers that the best way to health is to eat organic, non-GMO, no pesticide-free food, nutrient-dense food, unprocessed food, breads and crackers and things like this, unless they're whole grain properly prepared. I'm on the board of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and we teach about how to properly prepare foods and the principles of traditional diets. You need to eat well. I think you're much more likely to get health care and improve your health and well-being through stress management, meditation, and consulting with naturopaths and chiropractors and homeopaths than you are by going to most medical doctors who don't know much about nutrition or well-being, but just prescribe drugs. And let's be clear, the drugs don't heal the problem. They just hammer it into submission. That's not healing it, right? That's masking it with a pharmaceutical. So when you look at the total of what's happening, medical errors in America are the third leading cause of death in the United States. That's a staggering number. And if you look even at heart disease and cancer, which are the two biggest killers, those are about nutrition and pesticides, chemicals in our world. That's the true cause. We've spent trillions of dollars, I'm sure at this point, I'm guessing, but trillions on all the war on crime, the war on drugs, the war on cancer. And what do we have to show for it? Nothing, just so much money gone. And I would argue it's because medicine in America in particular is big business, and they're not held accountable by anybody. If they were, we would not have this situation, right? If it were really about doing the best for Americans, then we wouldn't have a situation. And what's so critical to really reflect on is, what is the oath that we hear all doctors take? Can you think of what all doctors are supposed to say or to pledge? To first do no harm. Mm-hmm. If they're supposed to first do no harm, they're really failing miserably. And if they're failing so miserably and our government is benevolent and on our side, why aren't they doing something about this? Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. Actually, I myself had my pituitary gland was getting too big about 5-6 years ago, so I had a transphenoidal surgery, and which, you know, puts all your hormones out of whack. But they wanted me to take this lifetime hormonal therapy, so I said no. And I did my own diet, nutrition, exercise program. I actually did research on what it would take, what vitamins, minerals, food would it take to enhance the biochemical processes to, you know, bring the pituitary gland back and to bring back the hormones in balance. So I actually did my own personal study on that. So I focused, you know, on those vitamins, minerals, and food substances that would do that. So basically didn't, except for the first week, didn't take any hormonal therapy, and took maybe, I would say, 6 to 9 months for my pituitary gland to grow back. But and then I do like a smoothie of turmeric, maca, organic honey, blueberries every day as well. So all of that put together, I feel fine, you know, today. So
that's great.
Yeah.
I went to doctors to try and figure out everything that was wrong with me, and it was homeopathy that truly changed my life. It is such a magical medicine. And all I can tell you is that the pharmaceutical industry, and together with the CDC and FDA, are trying to put homeopathy out of business. Now, why would that be? Why do they smear these healing modalities so much? It's because they're a threat, and because they know they're truly about healing rather than about, you know, if they can give you one drug and the drug causes some side effect, then they give you a drug for the side effect and then another drug, right? This is, you're a patient for life. If you heal yourself through food and nutrition and lifestyle, you're independent. You're not a patient. And that's what I think they don't want. You know, I think maybe we can bring this all together to kind of close with this and the next one, which is that in the US, well, let me say this first. I just read this morning that Germany, where they already have extremely stringent gun laws, is going to confiscate guns. I find that very interesting. They're going to be confiscating guns. They've just announced this, okay? What has happened essentially in every country when guns have been confiscated? Government is able to rule out of control and unaccountable. I mean, this is, the Nazis took guns. The Turks took guns from the Armenians. I'm Armenian, before they slaughtered 1.5 million Armenians. That's not a good sign. In the United States, they know they can't take our guns. They know that that is something that is impossible because of the Second Amendment. And what is happening instead, I think, is that they're trying to smear those of us who question official narratives that we know are patently false very often as domestic terrorists. And so what they're doing is, very recently, the Department of Homeland Security issued what's called an alert. And they said this, that there's a heightened threat environment fueled by several factors, including an online environment filled with false or misleading narratives and conspiracy theories and other forms of mis, dis, and malinformation. Right. Okay. They're saying that there's a heightened threat because these people could potentially inspire acts of violence. There's no evidence of any of that. I didn't talk about this earlier, but I think it's really pertinent to this point. And that is that the fact checkers who say that we're spreading mis, dis, or malinformation, they are funded by Gates. Mm-hmm. They are funded by government. They are literally, they are tools of the state and tools of the corporations and tools of the giant foundations. Yeah. But the reason that they're doing this is because they say that there's a widespread online proliferation of false or misleading narratives regarding unsubstantiated widespread election fraud and COVID-19. Okay. So what they are trying to do is, they know they can't take Americans' guns, but what they will do is try and paint anybody who questions the legitimacy of the last election or who questions officialdom, official orthodoxy on COVID-19 as domestic terrorists. And I have reason to believe that they have infiltrated different freedom groups and freedom movements, in particular health freedom movements. I've seen this. People have told me about this, that they've been monitoring different groups and they've seen agitators come in and start saying that they are going to, you know, we should bring our guns to the next rally. We should do this. We should do that. They are trying to create a situation where peaceful protesters somehow are embroiled in a violent situation. And then they will deem anybody who's involved in health freedom as a domestic terrorist. I think it's really important for people to understand this and to be very, very careful and very discerning about what groups that they're participating in, and, you know, just have your wits about you. Mm-hmm. And also to be aware that this is a type of, you know, this is not a normal thing. There's zero evidence that anybody in the health freedom movement is a threat to the government. There is evidence that they don't trust or believe the government. There is evidence that they think that the government is losing credibility. This is a deliberate attempt for them to retain the roles of power while people speak out and to potentially falsely paint them as extremists or violent in order to retain control, in order to smear them and then jail them. I think that's what's really going on. And I think it's important for people to understand this.
Yeah, and also
so really,
the misinformation part, as you mentioned earlier, one only has to check and go through the links of ownership of the companies that do that to see where it all eventually ultimately leads to, right? To see how many of them are being funded by, you know, the Gates Foundation and other type foundations that are trying to push their own agenda. So just
let me give you, there's a group called PolitiFact. It's very well known. And PolitiFact is a operation of the Poynter Institute. And PolitiFact is supposed to be a fact checker that checks all these facts and decides whether or not they're accurate. Well, PolitiFact is funded by the Poynter Institute, and the Poynter Institute is funded by the Gates Foundation. There's a clear connection between all of these. And then they deride anybody who says that these jabs aren't safe, that there are, you know, that COVID's not nearly as big of an issue as we're told, that, you know, many doctors and scientists have been saying that the true death rate is maybe slightly worse than a normal seasonal flu. You know, that people who are over 70 are 1,000 times more likely to have a problem from it than people under 70. So why would you want to control the entire economy and all of society if it's just for people's health and well-being? You wouldn't want to do that unless you had nefarious purposes. And people who speak out and say this are losing their social media platforms. So, you know, many of the doctors and scientists that I'm in contact with have lost their platforms. I've lost my, I don't have a private account on Twitter. They have banned me for life. And they banned tons of people.
Right.
That's what they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's just kind of wrap up by saying that what's really happening is that there's been this tremendous fiscal mismanagement, implementation of negative or zero rates, which has destroyed our bond markets, destroyed our pensions, and they have to do something to conceal their abject failure. Because if they don't, people are going to be pissed when they find out that their pensions are gone. And so I think what's going to happen is that they're going to attempt to have some kind of a debt holiday. And in order to have the debt holiday, you need to have the whole system, the control grid in place first, so that they can have the holiday, meaning default on federal debt, on national debt, government debt, and pensions, simultaneous with telling you, but we're going to give you universal basic income. They've got to have you in the system already and controlled so that there's nothing that you can do to fight back. Mm-hmm. And it's only been, this whole thing is only facilitated by the marriage of all of these different arms of essentially the state, which is the government, the media, pharma, big tech, big banks, private foundations, and NGOs. They're all part of it. It would not be possible without all of these groups. And of course, technology getting to where it is, which facilitates integration of all of these things, combined with concentration of all of our information into one digital identification, mm-hmm. which then is literally our gatekeeper for society.
And given all this likely trends, do you see or have suggestions for potential a version of this ahead of time, or like alternative type of solutions? Like what can the ordinary citizen do, or mm-hmm. or in conjunction with groups or foundations?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I'm not a licensed money manager and not a licensed financial advisor, so I can't give financial sure. advice. Yeah. I can tell you what I would do or some things that I think are wise. First of all, you live in Canada. The number one people can do is stand up. That's the number one thing they can do. Stand up, hold the line, do not comply. That's the number one thing people can do. And we have already proved through doing so that we can push back against these jab mandates. Now, they're trying to distract us, in my view, with the new crisis, which I won't mention, but the new crisis. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, a tremendous amount of misinformation or disinformation or conflicting information flying out around about that. It seems to me fairly clear that if the West truly wanted to defuse the situation, the West could have done that. And instead, they've agitated. And so my point is that the agenda is not over. It hasn't been implemented. And they're still using this, I think, to damage our supply chains, our food supply, all of our independence. So Russia and Ukraine represent 30% of the world's wheat exports. That's a huge amount. And so in answer to your question, I think you need to grow your own food. I think that's a really, really wise thing to do. It's also much healthier than the stuff that you get in a restaurant, especially in any kind of a fast food or anything like that. They're also damaging the supply chain for energy, right? I think that there will be cyber attacks as well. They've already said that they're going to be cyber attacks. And that will be one of the justifications for forcing a digital ID on everybody, because if they have cyber attacks, they can say it's not safe for you to go on the internet unless you have a digital ID.
Right.
See that? Yeah. Just like it's not safe for you to have cash because it covers virus. And hey, but we have the solution, problem, reaction, solution. So I think that growing your own food is a great idea. Creating your own healthcare system is a great idea. And that means getting together with true health practitioners and those who are from Western medicine. If you get in a car accident, you have an emergency or whatever, allopathic, Western medicine, modern medicine, whatever you call it, is fantastic for that, but it's not good for anything chronic. And so let's take the good from that and let's combine it together with all these other healing modalities into true healing centers, integrated health and healing centers. And we can do that in our communities. Find chiropractors and naturopaths and midwives and homeopaths and doctors who are open-minded and aware of these issues and put together your own system, because that's true resilience. That is true sustainability, and that's true independence. So healthcare, food, make sure you have a decent supply of water somehow, water source, filtration as well. And then, I don't know if you saw this, but I think it was the World Bank came out the other day and said that you shouldn't hoard cash. I don't know if that was a deliberate thing or if it was a mistake, but I think that hoarding some cash is not a bad idea.
The opposite.
So, I mean, when they're telling you not to do something, you pretty much know that you probably should be doing that. So maybe get some money out of the bank and just have some for a rainy day, right? Some people say have a year, some say 3 months, 6 months. I mean, depends on what your bills are, right? You want to be able to pay your bills if needed. And so if they collapse the financial system and you can't access your banks and you can't pay your bills, you want to be able to do so somehow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Something that, you know, I'm not a precious metals expert by any stretch of the imagination, but they talk about coins, junk silver in particular, because it's smaller denominations than gold coins, that those might be useful in a situation that is, you know, really, if it's a Mad Max kind of a situation, I guess, those kinds of things. So you could have solar panels, but, you know, that's expensive too. But anyway, these are the kinds of things you should be thinking about, I think, if you want to be independent and you want to have resilience. A wood stove is a great asset to have. So those kinds of things.
Great. Yeah, that's been very helpful to have that advice. And and your insight has been awesome and fantastic. How can our listeners learn more about your work, Leslie, in terms of Health Freedom Defense Fund?
Yeah, so you can find Health Freedom Defense Fund at healthfreedomdefense.org. You can follow us there. You can get to our social media and everything. You can join our newsletter. You can become a member for $10. You can donate. You can find out about all of our lawsuits on our website. There's a little legal corner where we talk about, we list all the documentation for all of our lawsuits and give updates and things there. And like I said, we have so many lawsuits pushing back against all of these egregious violations of our rights. And we need people's support and help for that financially, because it's expensive. I really believe that the US is kind of going to be the last man standing. In many ways, we already see, you know, we know, look, Trudeau is, he's a graduate of the young global leaders of the World Economic Forum, right? And we've seen these people all over the world. Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand as well. I can't remember if the Australian leadership is, but mm-hmm. there certainly are. And I think we need to fight and push back, and we're focused on doing that in the United States. And so we're grateful for any and every single donation, because we can't do it without your help and support. So
great. Thank you so much. And we'll put up a link as well on the website. Thank you.
Fantastic. It's been great being here with you, Richard. Thank you so very much.
Yes, likewise.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only. and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.